Sarva, Atma, Vyasa, Hetava, Great demigods like Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Indra, and Chandra are sometimes bewildered, trying to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is, so happens that when Krishna was present on this planet, Lord Brahma and King Indra also mistook him. And what to speak of the yogis or jnanis who conclude that the absolute truth of the personality of Godhead is impersonal. In the same way, great personalities and Vaishnavas like the four Kumaras are also invisible to ordinary persons, although they are traveling all over the universe in different planetary systems. When Sanatana Goswami went to see Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he could not be recognized by Chandrasekhar Acharya. The conclusion is that the Supreme Personality of God is situated in everyone's heart. His pure devotees, the Vaishnavas, are also traveling all over the world. But those who are under the modes of nature cannot understand the form of the Supreme Personality of God and the source of the cosmic manifestations of the Vaishnavas. It is said, therefore, that one cannot see the Supreme Personality of God or Vaishnava with these material eyes. One has to purify his senses and engage in the service of the Lord. Then gradually one can realize who is the Supreme Personality of God and who is a Vaishnava. Translation for tomorrow continued, although you are traveling in all planetary systems, people cannot know you, just as they cannot know the Super Soul, although he is within everyone's heart as the witness of everything. Even Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva cannot understand the Super Soul. So, Atmanam here refers to the Supreme Lord, who is situated within everyone. In spite of that, most of the people don't know that, so they are in ignorance, in spite of the fact that the Supreme Lord is within, inside them. So it may seem obvious, but because they're not qualified, therefore they cannot see. So what to speak of outside as well? If the Lord is outside, still, if we're not qualified, we cannot see him. And of course, this not only goes for the Supreme Lord, but also the devotees of the Lord. Of course, the Kumaras are also rather in between because they're Shaktivesh avatars of the Lord. They're devotees of the Lord, but also they're empowered by the Lord's avatars. In any case, the idea here is that great personalities, devotees, and the Supreme Lord are generally invisible to normal people, require special qualification. In the case of the Lord, of course, that's somewhat understandable, because he definitely cannot be seen with material eyes because he has a spiritual form. And we have material eyes. So it's impossible to understand or conceive of something spiritual with a material mechanism. Just like you cannot use the eye to smell or the ear to see. They don't function in the same way. So all the material senses also don't function in relation to perceiving the Lord, because he is non-material and the senses are material. So therefore it is rather irrelevant to say that you have to prove God by showing him to me, because if we're unqualified, then we'll never see God, and he cannot be proved by material means. Nevertheless, still, proof is required, because otherwise people don't get faith if there's just an abstract principle that we have to believe in. What is the proof? So, one, of course, is indirect, and that is we go to the scripture and we accept those statements. Yes, God exists. Of course, that is also based upon faith in that particular scripture. If we don't believe scripture, then we won't believe that statement. But then again, that statement is supported by other persons. So the scripture is supported by a wide variety of persons over many, many generations. So that is another confirmation. In other words, something which is not scripture and not valuable will not be valued over generations. It will be discarded. And we can see that many, many works have been written over many, many centuries, but everything does not survive because it is not very significant. So those things which are significant survive. Why? Because they have some value. So that is why the Vedas are preserved in the way they are, whereas other works which were also written very early in the history of India are not there. So they are intact over 5,000 years historically speaking. So why are they preserved? Because they had some valuable content. People believe them. If they're just nonsense, they would throw them out after a few years. But just as we have newspapers and whatever, generally people don't look at them after the one day. Throw it in the garbage. Yeah? Not very significant. So, therefore we have scripture and we have the testimony of previous persons, with great authorities, wise people, sages, who value those things. So that is the another proof. That's a little bit indirect. Nevertheless, a lot of knowledge is based on that. Even science is based on that. Science is based on a previous tradition. It doesn't come from nowhere. It comes from something else. So you always base your facts on some other facts, which people have accepted somehow or other. But you say, of course, well, that's not actually just the same scripture, because scripture we cannot prove it, whereas these material things we can prove, science we can prove. But how much we can prove science? Only insofar as we believe our senses. In that sense, we can say it's true. But we also know that the senses are limited. So in one sense, things are conforming, certain things are conforming to our limited senses, and that we say is the truth. But it may not be, because we can't see everything. We cannot think of everything. We cannot conceive of everything. In that way, there's an authority in science based on certain presumptions. That this is true, but maybe it's not true. in this way, there is a little bit of doubt even there. However, the modern conviction is that no, what we see is real. It's the only real, that's the conviction. But of course we also know that that's not really true, because in science they have theories which they have not proved. And it's more or less correct, they think, but it's not completely proved, absolutely proved. And even if it is proved, they call it a law, but even then sometimes it's not absolutely true. So these laws have contradictions in them also. And they may not know in the beginning, but after many, many years, and they say, oh, it's not quite true like that, and they change the law a little bit. is where the perceptions change over time and knowledge changes, facts change over time. In this way we have doubts about even science. Here in terms of does God exist or not, yes, we have to go to the scripture, and then we have the acharyas and past persons. Then, of course, we have the individual person. He can choose to believe or not believe. He can choose to believe in science or he not believe in science, or he can choose to believe in God or not believe in God. And he may believe in both, and adjust both, or he may believe in one or the other. So it is up to the individual. Of course, that is also a little risky, because what is the qualification of the individual in terms of, you know, education or whatnot? So, and nevertheless, ultimately, the individual is also involved in deciding what is real and what is true. So, some people believe in God and some people don't. Some scientists believe in God and some don't. So, there we have some sort of conviction based on something. And we cannot say everybody's a fool, and all the scientists that believe in God are fools, whereas those that don't believe in God are not fools. Can't say that also. So, there is something there which gives them the conviction of Supreme Lord. So that is what we call faith. Faith is based on some sort of experience by which we get conviction. It may not be tangible in the sense that, yes, I saw God yesterday or whatever, but nevertheless, there is a conviction that God exists because of certain experiences in this life and previous life, etc. So that we have to take into account also. So therefore, belief in God is based on faith, scripture, previous testimony, etc. Then, of course, God does show himself to those who are qualified. So if we become qualified, then we see God. But those who are not qualified cannot see God. So we can have a personal experience of God and a conviction. At the same time, it may be difficult to convince others, because we cannot show that God to them because they don't have the eyes to see. So this is a difficulty in proving God. If you're not qualified, you cannot see. So it depends upon the process. We have processes mentioned in scripture by which we can become qualified to see God. And we follow the process, and then we should get the result. And how do we know the process is true or whatever? Again, we have the testimony of previous persons. Various sages and acharyas in the past have said, yes, this works. We have seen Supreme Lord through this process. So we accept that. Just as modern science will accept, okay, Newton's theory is correct because he's wise and we accept him. That's all. We're not going to try to prove the theory of our law of gravity or whatever. Simply accept it. Because everybody else has accepted in the past. All scientists have accepted this, will accept it also. So similar with spiritual things. Spiritual persons in the past accepted, and they have realization. Therefore, we take their testimony, we accept the fact in the present time. We accept the process in the present time. And we follow that. So though God is not visible to the normal person, the scriptures give us a method by which we can understand and realize and see God. And we follow the process and we get the result. So that is actually the whole purpose of scripture, to make us qualified to understand and recognize and appreciate the presence of the Supreme Lord. The other factor, of course, is that the devotee is visible, more visible. Of course, he is, as said here, sometimes even Brahma and Shiva cannot see the devotees, as they cannot see the super soul in the heart. So it may be difficult to see devotees all the time. Nevertheless, they are more visible than the Lord. So the devotee is a representative of the Lord and carries the Shakti of the Lord. So we cannot see the Lord, but at least we can meet the devotees of the Lord. And through them, we can feel the presence of the Lord because of that Shakti of the Lord within them. So as Bhagavatam says, the great devotees carry within them the Lord, so they are tirthas, they are holy places. Just as holy places are worshipped because there are forms of the Lord there. So the devotee has the form of the Lord in his heart, and therefore he's also like a tirtha. So this is the other way in which we can approach the Supreme Lord through the devotees of the Lord. So that is why Bhagavatam and other scriptures often recommend the process of approaching the devotees. It is through the devotees that we can learn about the Supreme Lord. So here actually the Kumaras have come to give instructions to Prithu Maharaj. They are actually going to teach them things. So as great devotees of the Lord, they are carrying out a very nice function here of giving instructions. And of course, the instructions are beneficial not only for Parikshit, for other persons as well. So in this way, they get they're giving blessings to people in general. So the Lord is not visible, but we become qualified by the process. And we also have, of course, the scriptures, and we have the past authorities, and then we have the devotees of the present time who communicate the Lord to us. So in this way, the Lord becomes accessible.
No, pure devotee always feels Kripachol. Pure devotee always feels Kripachol in their heart.
Mm.
Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, they come in,
yeah.
They like the Kripachol.
Mm.
But they are more elevated devotees.
Who?
Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva.
Well, it depends. Of course, Brahma and Shiva are great devotees, yes. And at the same time, of course, it doesn't mention here them, this is causes of the creation, so to speak, so not definitely them, it could mean any of the devatas as well. To some degree, they're all devotees of the Lord, to some degree, they have some understanding of the Lord, but it is not complete as that of other devotees. So there's a hierarchy of devotees mentioned in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. And the real devotees are those who are intimately associated with the Lord. Such as the Pandavas or the inhabitants of Vrindavan, etc. So they're even higher. But actually, they don't see Paramatma in the heart, they see Krishna. That's higher. So yogis can see Paramatma with great difficulty, of course. But it is only devotees of the Lord that see Bhagavan, personal form of the Lord. So higher than the realization of Paramatma is the realization of Bhagavan. That is available only to devotees. In general, however, people in this material world have to really concentrate even to realize Paramatma in the heart, the Lord in the heart. That is difficult for most people. And therefore, they have to really do some sadhana to see Paramatma. So yoga is one of the sadhanas to do that. Those with devotional service surpass that. And they realize the superior form of the Lord. That is Bhagavan.
So the yogis only go to the other planets. Yogis, by realizing the Kripachol, they go to the other planets.
They can go to other planets if they realize Paramatma. They can also ask for liberation, get mukti. They can get mukti also. Well, they're invisible, but we don't recognize them. Of course, in the case of the Kumaras, they're special people that wander around the universe, and they're not always visible in one particular place. But the devotees may be visible, but they're not recognized. Just like the Lord is also visible, but not recognized. So Shishupala sees Krishna, but then he calls him a rascal, whatever. He doesn't recognize him. So the same with the devotees, they may be walking around, but people don't recognize them, so they can't get the value from the devotee. Well, there's different degrees of what we call pure devotees. Of course, the definition of pure devotee is a little ambiguous. Sometimes it refers to Mani Madhikari. So it depends on what you mean by pure devotee. If you mean person on prema, then there's always prema also. So there's prema for Vishnu, and there's prema all the way up to Krishna prema, and Krishna prema, there's different levels there also. So there are degrees.
So the
Vaishnavas
are usually ordinary persons.
How
the
ordinary persons deal with it? A gap of superti in the beginning until they get faith.
No, when Krishna created the material world, he gave a long sastra to do the yajna, so they can become God consciousness. When Krishna created his material world, he gave sastra along with the material world. To be yajna, so they can realize God. So Krishna has given the chance of it. So we are taking advantage, you know, devotees.
Yeah.
So the karmic dog jokes, yeah, anyway. That's what Krishna anyway gives chance along with the creation.
Yeah. Yeah, and scripture is there. He supplies the sages and the acharyas, he supplies the devotees, like he comes as avatar. He supplies the process.
Here the Prabhupada is saying, Chandrasekhar, when Sanatana Goswami went to see Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Chandrasekhar could not understand.
He couldn't understand who Sanatana Goswami was. He didn't recognize him in the beginning because he was dressed in poor clothing, etc. So devotees may be difficult to see.
Yeah.